The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
And thank you all so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, mi amigo, the man that was sued by Lay's Potato Chips because he can eat only one, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios enjoying my life in Tornado Alley. Yes, it's that time of the year, folks. It's tornado
everybody,
season.
Be careful.
It's tornado season, and we live in Tornado Alley, and a couple days ago, we had 90-mile-an-hour straight-line winds. I woke up, my wife's greenhouse was gone. I thought aliens took it till I found it in the neighbor's yard. Totally destroyed. It looked like Gaza, folks. It was blown to pieces.
There was no saving it?
No. And now, all the plants were scattered everywhere. My wife was crying. Like, literally, she was crying.
It blew the gates off of my privacy fence.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It swung
trees
them open
down.
And then I just ripped them off. I had to go pick them up and fix them and put them back together.
There was no tornado, but it looks like one. I mean, there's lots of trees are down. Lots of people were without power.
Lots of people's trash cans were two blocks away from their home.
I started crying, too, because that means I got to buy another greenhouse. So that's right. Like easily a lot of money again.
You're like, I don't need to do this.
I could hear it, though. It was like, no joke, it was like 3 a.m, and I could hear hail, and I could hear it. And Luke's bedroom is closest to where the greenhouse was.
Oh, did he hear it take flight?
He heard it. He was like, I thought something was coming through the wall, Dad. I was like, holy cow.
Oh, yeah, but you know what? Keeps life interesting.
It does.
Keeps it popping.
Straight line winds. I mean, it's like,
I love it.
It's been blowing. We had like dust from the Sahara Desert blowing in. It's crazy. Yeah. How does that happen?
I got West Texas dust buried in my eyes.
Yeah. It's been windy, folks.
Oh, yeah. It's been something else. It's been fun, though. It's been a good time. Hey, look, we're getting around into the spring. We know it's going to get touch and go down here, just like it does all the way up through this whole stretch, all the way up into Missouri, this whole thing. Everybody's fixing to get some touch and go times on the farms.
You got to enjoy the spring because we don't have such a short spring in Texas. Literally, we got about 3 weeks, and then it'll be 100.
Facts.
100 for 6 months.
Hopefully, we dodge the heat. But you know what you can't dodge, Mr. Filson?
What's that?
Upright humanoids. You can never escape upright humanoids. Folks, get a load of this. Our good buddy Lon, he's hooked me up with this creepy 3-foot-tall upright humanoid was seen on a Johnstown, Pennsylvania farm. That's right. We're back in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Johnstown. That's where the big flood happened.
What is going on? Pennsylvania. This place, man. You Pennsylvanians live in a wild place, a very wild spot. Let's kick this off. It says, this is probably useless information, but when I was a kid in the 70s and told people what I saw, they said I was dreaming. I grew up on a farm outside of Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Some beings came into my bedroom and stood on the porch roof outside of my bedroom at night. I would cry, please stop. They were about 3-foot-tall, humanoid, and upright. My dad told me that they were stray cats. They weren't cats. I wasn't allowed to watch TV for a long time because my parents thought the television shows were giving me bad dreams. Well, that would be a bummer.
Yeah.
Right? The closest neighbor was 200 yards away and asked me why my nightlight was so bright. I only had a little Christmas tree light. She said it was so bright she was concerned the house might be on fire, but she could tell that it wasn't a fire, just a bright light. Uh-oh. Abduction orb. I was born in 1970 and we moved out of that house in 1979. I never saw them again, but I know what I remember. I've been trying to tell myself that they were dreams for the last 35 years, but I know I wasn't dreaming. Like I said, useless information after 35 years, but it feels good to get off my chest and have someone be able to tell that would say you were dreaming isn't going to happen. And the neighbor who asked about the super bright light wasn't dreaming either. Thanks. Gee.
Yeah. No, it sounds like alien abduction.
Look, share your story is great. I'm glad you have a safe place for it, but it does, right? Aliens on the roof. But Let me ask you this. This is the part I wanted to bring up about the story. We get these abduction stories and where they'll talk about, you know, the aliens in my room, the beings in my room.
Yeah, I've got one for you.
But these are standing on the outside roof. We don't get a lot of stories to where the aliens are standing on the roof, right? They're not outside just chilling. They're either lurking about maybe in the distance where you might see them or in the room. Right. We don't have a lot of stories with them where they're just standing on the roof staring in there.
Yeah, reminds me of the Hopkinsville goblins. You know, there's like aliens or something crawling around on the roof. I think there's been a couple sightings where somebody like looked across the street and saw something standing on the neighbor's house.
Yes, that's happened.
But those are more like gargoyle sightings, not aliens. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, not some sort of alien humanoid-esque.
Speaking of aliens and coming into your room. This one's pretty interesting. Check this out.
Please, no.
I was wondering if I should request an investigation into something I encountered many years ago. The event occurred in 1972. I was between 8 and 9 years old. I was living with my family at 15 Greencroft Avenue in Staten Island, New York. I woke sometime after 11 p.m. I know it was after 11 p.m. because my parents were sleeping, and it may have been after 11:30 p.m., but it was around that time because they were watching the evening news. I guess they weren't sleeping. He thought they were sleeping, but they were watching the evening news. Our bedrooms were on the second floor of the house. I was lying in my bed, and I woke up and saw the Peanuts character, Charlie Brown, walking in the door of my room. He was very tall and sort of floated. His head rocked from side to side, and his head grew larger, like a balloon being inflated. His head became very large, and then suddenly his whole body, including his head, shrunk very small in midair. Then I saw the tiny speck buzzing around in circles like a housefly, but very quickly the buzzing noise was a bit louder than an insect. It lasted only a few seconds. The speck then darted to the corner of the room, nearest to my bed and into the floor, at the corner where the walls and the floor intersect. I jumped out of my bed, clawed with my fingertips at the carpet, trying to find the speck. I felt as if I was trying to chase it. I knew I could not catch it because it was shrinking smaller and smaller. I read people described ships folding themselves into or shrinking out of sight. There was no spaceship in my room. What I saw took on the appearance of a cartoon character known as Charlie Brown. I believe now it may have been a gray alien. N. So we've heard stories like this where the alien tries to mimic something that you know because it doesn't want you to be traumatized by the abduction. That's why oftentimes they'll take the form of an owl or something like that, or like this case, Charlie Brown, or like a Care Bear or something that's not going to cause trauma and you're less likely to remember it, right? Because it's something that's in your mind. What was the guy that wrote Messengers? Mike Cleland.
He wrote a book about
the synchronicities and owls and manifestations like that. In fact, you said your mother years ago encountered an owl that was about 5 foot tall.
Yeah, she saw it down on the end of her driveway.
Yeah.
She called me the very next day or whatnot and was like, look, I've seen something I can't explain.
I think that has something to do with alien abduction. For whatever reason, they try to take on the form of something that's not going to scare you.
I wish they'd come back and get her and take her now. they'd abduct her. They'd bring her back.
Right, yeah.
Since we're heading off to the great state of Tennessee pretty quick, I figured I would share this right here. It says, I was reminded of a sighting my sister frantically called me up and told me about on April 17th of 2010. This is her description. This took place along Roan Road in Tennessee. It says, my sister was driving her ex-husband and his son back home from a birthday dinner at her favorite restaurant on April 17th of 2010 and was coming through Roan Mountain, Tennessee, along a 2-lane stretch of road when ahead of them, they saw what appeared to look like a large white ball. Now, this white ball moved out onto the highway directly from a cemetery above. She said it began coming towards them as if it were trying to collide with the vehicle, and the closer they got to this thing, they had a better look at it. She described it as appearing to be half reptilian, animal of course, half human, with human limbs. It had two arms and two legs and was crawling on its belly. She hoped that the creature would exit the highway and into the woods to prevent getting hit, but it just continued moving directly at them and the vehicle. She slammed on her brakes to avoid hitting it, and at that point, the creature went from crawling to spinning like a tornado right before it made contact with the front of the vehicle. Then she said it went beneath the radiator and vanished. She, her ex, and his son were all quite shaken and terrified and said that whatever the creature was, it wasn't anything from this world. She continued describing it as having two human arms and legs, mid-body alligator or reptile, and white as snow. It crawled on its stomach like a reptile. Her ex stated that during the encounter, it felt like time had stood still. Everything just slowed down. All three of them agreed that they had a very eerie feeling of something very evil present before they even encountered this thing. Brian.
And it was spinning like the Tasmanian devil?
It went into a spin mode. Yeah. That's yeah. Crazy. After they made contact, the thing starts spinning and then sounds like it hit in your radiator. Sell the car. What could that be?
I have no idea.
I mean, let's look. Aside it from being exactly what it was, is this thing... Is it some sort of crazy fae or something? I mean, like, look, there's no time slip this thing's coming from, so it's got to be some other dimension, or it's just pure evil trying to jump on your car.
Well, and they talked about time, felt like it was slowing down or standing still. This is often associated with things manifesting from another dimension, right? It's
yeah.
The Oz effect, whatever you want to call it. Sounds go away or disappear.
You get that feeling.
Slow down.
You get these strange feelings.
What you feel is like a few minutes turns out to be an hour later. You know, like things, odd things happen.
It is. Yeah. That's an interesting sighting.
Very.
That's a very interesting sighting because it doesn't go along with anything that we've covered before. To like, what is it? Dorothy, the good one. What was the good witch? Glinda, the good witch, where yeah. She comes out in the orb and like turns into the good witch.
Mm-hmm.
This comes out in an orb and turns into an albino alligator guy that turns into the Tasmanian devil. I'm like, bro. That's the kind of stuff. And here's the other thing. Three people saw it.
Yeah, right.
Three. Not one driving late at night. Three people.
Right. That's the thing with yeah. Sightings, right? We always talk about who's the observer and like what are the conditions. When it's a one person, it's easier to write off than if it's multiple people.
Yep.
Because you can't all three simultaneously hallucinate the same thing.
True. True facts.
Speaking of interesting sightings, check this out. It says, in 1993 or 94, I'm not sure, I was living in a place in Tennessee.
All right.
In a small town called Antioch. I was out walking the dog one day or letting the dog do his business out in the front yard. I could feel something watching me.
Uh-oh.
It was about 3:00 in the afternoon, and everybody around there was at work except for me. And I could just feel like something was watching me. I started looking at the nearby woods, down in the woods directly in front of me. I couldn't see anything, but I could hear leaves rustling in the trees. So I started looking up towards the top of the trees, and I had very good eyesight at the time. I didn't do any drugs. I didn't drink. I saw something crouched down at the top of the trees. The only way I could describe it, I don't even know if the movie had come out yet, so I didn't know anything to call it, or I didn't know anything about the movie Predator. But what they saw in that invisible creature in the movie, that cloaked alien, looked exactly like what I was seeing. You could see the outline of everything, but you could see right through it. And it was sitting up in the very tops of the trees where it wouldn't hold the weight of a man by any means. This thing was the size of a man. It just stood there, and I let go of the leash, and I took off at a dead run and yelled, "Hey!" I took off at a dead run towards this thing, and it started running across the tops of the trees. It ran quickly, just in no time. I mean, this thing, whatever it was really fast. I don't know how it was running across the trees, the tops of the trees, but I know what I saw. After I thought about it, I thought, what in the world are you going to do chasing this thing? I stopped, and it stopped about 50 yards away from where it started, and it turned around and looked at me again, and then it took off into the woods. through the tops of the trees, out into the woods, and I couldn't see it anymore. It scared the hell out of me. I know that. And I never told anybody about it because I thought people would think I'm a crazy as a loon. Gee. So, like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragons, this thing's running across the tops of the trees. People always see the Glimmer Man up in the trees.
Dude, that's so awesome.
A cloaked, predator-like being, right?
It's a ninja.
Could be.
That's what we keep forgetting to even add to it. It's ninjas.
You know, when I was a kid, I always thought like ninjas were these amazing
Don't start with your ninja hate now,
and,
okay?
In just because you've gotten older, like cowards,
and found that you got hoodwinked at Shokasugi movies were so great, don't start hating on ninjas now.
I'm not hating. I'm just saying I thought that they were elite fighting force, and it turns out they're kind of...
You can't be mad at ninjas for your ignorance.
You sneak up and kill somebody behind them when they don't even know they're in a fight. I mean, it's like a sucker punch, right?
Sounds like the best move to me. Sounds like the best move to me. Folks, if you want to have a good move, you're going to stick with us till after the break, when I'm going to discuss a little bit about the Spotsville Monster. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
All right, y'all. As I alluded to a little bit beforehand, now it's time for story time with Uncle Ham again. I don't really... No, there's so many nuggets in the great state of Kentucky that I don't even know where to dig into to begin to tell these wild stories. And like I had said on the last episode that I was going to start doing more around the world, around the United States, covering state by state by state, and, you know, digging out some crazy stories and stuff that come from these states. And what's funny that is all the stuff that I've looked into. The funny stuff about this is some states don't really have a lot to choose from outside like your typical Bigfoot, which it's sad to say your typical, but your typical Bigfoot sightings or, you know, maybe a lake monster sighting here or there every now and again. But most of them are descriptions of a cryptid like Bigfoot. They're more described as an upright humanoid more than anything that you find from state to state. And it's, I don't even want to share this with y'all, but I'm going to, is it's almost like some states don't have a good imagination when they come to trying to find strange, unusual things. And other states are just pushing their chips in. They're all in on the crazy tales and crazy stories. And Kentucky is the latter of those two. Kentucky has a lot of tales. Now, there's going to be some of you right now listening that are diehard cryptozoologists or diehard into crazy stories. And the first thing when I bring up Kentucky, you're going to think about the Hopkinsville goblins. Now, we've covered that every show that's ever decided to turn on a microphone in this genre, in our realm of stories and in our realm of weirdness and high strangeness, has done a show on the Hopkinsville goblins. If you haven't heard it, go back and find one of ours or just punch it in. You can find anybody. You can get on YouTube. It's endless. But basically, it started back in 1955 in August, and then it goes on from there. of some really, really crazy tales. And I would like to say that that was about it, that they didn't really vary much other than some Bigfoot tales in Kentucky and the goblins. But that would 100% be a lie. So I'm going to dig into some more of those. And when I say dig in, some of these go wild. And then I have got a really good treat for a Bigfoot story that I stumbled upon this story years ago and completely forgot about it. And then we've talked about it off and on, but when you do this, you go blank on so many stories and then they start all kind of blending together of what state are they in? Where did they come from? What year was it? Like they all start falling into one. Like I could legitimately tell a story of a lake monster from Florida that might sound like it was in Missouri or whatever, because they're all so close. And it's just because the way we tell stories and trade tales throughout the years in our oral traditions, if you will, of storytelling. But there's a few here in Kentucky that stand out. And one of them is, of course, the Pope Lick Monster. Now, we've discussed this, I think, on an Elite show, but I can't remember. Like I said, these all start running together. But the greatest thing about it is it's another one of those that may be a goat or sheep. And I'm pretty sure I've talked about this with Mr. Crouch whenever we did the Goat Man series and stuff. And we had him on. But it's come up before, the Pope Lick Monster. Like I said, we've discussed of it being a very large goat. Like there's pictures and renditions online of it, of like a muscular white goat standing up there. And it's great. And if you were going to have a painting in your house, I would suggest getting a painting of the Pope Lick Monster. Now, a lot of these people that come forward with this, they chalk this up as an urban legend in these areas around there. It takes place around the Norfolk Southern Railroad trestle over Floyd's Fork Creek near Louisville, Kentucky. So it's not too far from a big city, you know, something that's possibly well-known area. And apparently it was named after Pope Lick Creek, which is below the Pope Lick train trestle. So that's the reason they gave it the Pope Lick Monster. Now, like, let me give you the description of this. It says a human goat hybrid. All right, we can go. We've kind of figured that part out. But they say it's grotesquely deformed. All right. So I don't know why you'd say that grotesquely deformed if it's moving around and it's able to move around fluidly and up and down the creeks and whatnot like that. You couldn't be too grotesquely deformed. You know, it'd be too hard to travel. So I'm assuming that these are just words that they're using to really dress it up or to doll it up. But they go on to say that it was all white, an alabaster like skin, and that it was a fur covered goat legs, and it's got horns coming out of the forehead. And like we said, it's greasy. They say some of the hair on it is greasy. Now, I've heard, and we've discussed this before, like I think when we were discussing the Lake Worth Monster, when they had talked about it seeing like it was greasy or it had scales and all that stuff, which it could have been eating fish. Anything that I research that takes place around a body of water or along a creek or river system, I always think that it could have just been unclean. It could have just been feeding on whatever it was catching, taken out of the water. I mean, they're not washing their hands to stay clean and from the corona. So they're just living their best life, eating whatever they can get their hands on, this whole thing. So I don't really take it, you know, as, oh, it's, you know, it's all like it's exuding this or like it's greasy appearance is the way it's naturally appearance. I think it's just something that may just be the, you know, something that happened because of its diet or because of where it had lived. Maybe it fell in the mud before it got to you never fell down. We've all fell down. Maybe it fell down. And then when they saw it, maybe it was like, oh, they saw me and I'm dirty. Like I hate spilling coffee on my pants and then going to work with coffee stains on your pants. That's not normally the way you look. But now when somebody tells that description, oh man, he was, you know, he had coffee stains all over his pants. I'm not sure what it was. Yeah, then I just spilt it on me in the car. So I don't really know. But the story goes along that this area by the Pope Lick Monster and that train trestle and all that was one where kids did what was they would consider a bravery test. For those of you that are old, you know, my age or whatnot, you remember the old eraser trick where everybody's got scars on the back of their hands. You know, you got to say that you're tough and you rub an eraser till you rub a big burn, or you rub a spot off on your arm, or, you know, what is it? You put your forearm against your buddy's forearm, and then he would put a lit cigarette, you know, laying there in the crease between your arms, and whoever pulled away, you know, was the weak one. And there's always this crazy dumb stuff we do as kids. So apparently this was another one of those things that in the summer of 87, there was a young fella doing this trestle stuff right there. And he actually fell to his death off of that train trestle. And so some say, oh, you know, it could have been that. It could have been, you know, the Pope Lick monster, the evil areas and all this that it comes from. But it does, the more you look into the story, it does sound like there could have been a lot of urban legend, like maybe they were telling kids to stay away from this area and using these stories, and kind of somebody thought this up or thought that up and decided, you know, this is where we're going to stay, right? Like, this is the stuff we're going to do. We're going to use this to make sure that nobody else goes down there and might take a fall. You know, we don't need anybody to take a fall, so we're just going to leave it to where they don't possibly take a fall. So we'll tell them that there's a goat man. Now, as we've already established, we already know Mr. Filson loves him some lake monsters. And I don't know why he's against it, but, and I think, like he said before, I think he's kind of coming around to it. This is another one that they're in Kentucky in a place called Harrington Lake. They have a monster in this lake that is one of my top five favorite descriptions of a monster ever. Now, there was a, now get a load of the lake size. First of all, it's a man-made lake, folks. So it's not natural. It's a man-made lake. It's a little over 2,300 acres of water. And in 1972, this monster first got on everybody's radar there at Harrington Lake because a fella named Lawrence Thompson was fishing, and he reported that he saw something that he said, it looked like the snout of a pig moving along just above the water at the same speed of a boat with a trolling motor. And he goes on to say that it had a curly tail similar to a pig. So it's got a snout and a tail, except the only problem was the tail was coming up, he said, roughly a 12 to 15 foot behind where he saw the snout. That's right. A giant water pig, folks. So the story alone of that. Now, look, there's a lot of people said that it was an alligator, right? A lot of people that have reported seeing it, they were like, oh, it's just an alligator. We thought it was something else. But there's been several sightings that still come along saying that it's a cross between. Now, how you would get a curly tail to look like a pigtail, or I can understand a pig snout, a misidentification of a pig snout, sticking up out of the lake, or like an alligator's nose sticking out of the water. And in 72, maybe of course, everybody knew what an alligator looked like then. It's not like that, but maybe as a quick glance, even now, and you could be like, oh, I thought it was a pig's nose. Cause if just that little snout's peeking out of the water, maybe it was just enough to look like it was round. The tail, I don't really know, but the description of it that was given later was it was a cross between a giant eel with a pig's face. If that is not the single greatest thing ever, can you imagine a 15-foot eel pig, man bear pig, but eel pig? It just, it's too good to be true. It's too good to be true. But sticking along the idea of some crazy explanation, in the summer of 75, there was a fellow named Clarence Cable. And Clarence was hanging out at a wrecking yard that's called the Bluegrass Body Shop. And apparently, not only did he just hang out there, he worked there, but he was also one of the owners of the area there. And the story goes that Mr. Cable saw a 15-foot long lizard that came out from behind a wrecked car. And you know how they do that huffing sound? Well, it was doing that towards him. Now, he describes it is having black eyes like a frog. So it's got these frog eyes, and the way it sat on its head was kind of funky. He also goes on to say that it had these dots on its body and looked to have stripes, some sort of striped color on it in some form or fashion. Now, what's funnier than that is Clarence's little brother, Garrett, the next day after he had heard this story, was like, huh, you know, that's pretty cool. And the next day, Garrett saw the same lizard. So they both saw this lizard. So they keep monkeying around with it. And they ended up, I believe they ended up shooting at it, but I don't think they ever hit this whole thing. But they both talked about how they saw a giant lizard. They even went after it the next day, saw it again the very next day. Now, a lot of people, of course, came forward and were like, you boys have just been hitting Grandpa's cough syrup. Like, y'all didn't really see a giant 15-foot-long lizard. And then a few other people came forward and said, well, now you have to also take into consideration the time. It's 1975. I'm sure there wasn't near as many exotic pet owners that might have like a giant monitor lizard or something like that, or even an iguana, which, of course, neither one would probably get that big. But still, I'm trying to think, what would be the size? Let's see. What would be the size? What is a Komodo dragon? I think we'd just say 9 foot at the largest might be a 9-footer, right? So let's just say that. So you're still talking about something bigger than that. But nobody, I would think, in Kentucky in 1975 would have an escaped lizard that would just be hanging out in a bottle, like a wrecking yard. And if that's not turned into a book and a movie about a giant lizard that lives in a wrecking yard in rural Kentucky that attacks people, or like the owner is, he doesn't know it's there and somebody's trying to foreclose on his land or whatnot, you know, and root him out because they're going to build a mall, and he's just feeding these people to this giant lizard, then it needs to be written. That's a story that needs to be told. So I can't imagine what did I did. I did a story. Remember when I was covering it in Australia, we talked about the megafauna down there and those giant lizards that people were seeing. So apparently Kentucky had a few, and it sounds like they had a giant lizard there as well. Now, there's also some Mothman sighting stories, and also stories, you know, about the flying humanoids. Kentucky's got a few flying humanoid stories. There's stories that pop up from, and I don't know why in the 70s, there's a lot of stories of these come from the 70s. So Kentucky either had a crazy animal flap in the 70s, or the LSD that waved through that part after the turn of the 60s, after they rolled into the 70s, the drugs must have been really, really good in Kentucky. I'm joking, folks. Settle down. These are jokes. So apparently, in 1973 in Kentucky, there's what's referred to as a devil monkey. So it had three-toed feet and a long tail, and it looked like a baboon with like the lower half like a kangaroo. And the story goes that near Albany, Kentucky, there were three of these primates that killed some livestock. Now, they never caught what they considered devil monkeys, is what they were talking about. But it wasn't too far, apparently, from a state park, a big acreage area, rather, there in the state. And people were like, well, could it have been baboons? Man, you know what? I guess it could have been, but you're not going to have those crazy legs. Y'all know we're not going to have big bushy tails on a baboon. But I guess, is it any wilder than to have like a giant 15-foot-long lizard, as I'm sitting here thinking about it? Not really. But yet again, these devil monkeys, could these things have been, I like to believe they're small Sasquatch, they're Sasquirts, and they're just out, you know, being thugs. Maybe they're doing hood rat stuff, and they're just being hood rat Sasquirts. And so that's what, like two or three of them, because they were adolescent. Let's say they were adolescent. Now, that doesn't explain the tails and the legs, but also the idea of it being a troop of baboons, some kind of funky mutated baboons loose in Kentucky from a zoo or a circus or a private collection, to me sounds more preposterous than adolescent Sasquatch, to be honest with you. But like I said before, it still doesn't stop there. We have talked in the past about Spring Hill Jack. Well, apparently Kentucky had one of it like itself that they refer to as the Demon Leaper. That the people and local residents there of Louisville, they said, would look upon the Gothic Walnut Street Baptist Church, and they would believe what they saw to be a living gargoyle. And people described it as bat-like with leathery skin and wings, which, you know, we get a lot of those descriptions, and that it would hop along the top of the church roof. And they went so far, and apparently they had seen it jumping, of course, from roof to roof, but it stayed around this whole area. So they start calling it the Demon Leaper, I guess because it's on a church. Now, there's some other stories, like I said, that go through here that you can dig deep into the Demon Leaper stories. But like I said, it goes along with, the Spring Hill Jack. there's a lot of these little quick quirps, and they all almost sound like they would be urban legend. Like there's a lot of these tales, as you go, like I said before, you go state to state, that they overlap, where they sound a lot alike, and they sound a lot like urban legend. Like they're told for a reason. Like if you were going to have a church, and let's say you had your congregation was dwindling. Let's say that your congregation was dwindling at this time, and you knew that you could get a lot of people. Either you had to have some kind of miracle worker thing going on that you were trying to get your congregation, you know, people to pay attention to your church, or something creepy happened. I mean, would there be a better tale than the tale of a demon leaper, that there's a demon, a demonic force trying to close your old church, or that you're going to battle for mankind? I mean, I know you're getting out there, but look at the show you're listening to, folks. You got to think about these things. Could it have easily been real? Could it have been the fact that maybe there was a demon trying to shut something down? Maybe there's a deeper story that we're not aware of that's taking place in that church. Or maybe it was, you know, it had come for somebody, it had done something wrong, and we're letting know there were things going on in the church that they wanted to end, you know, whatever. There's crazy stuff. Or could it have just been, like I said, a publicity stunt or an old wives' tale? Yeah, I guess it could have. But there's another story that piques my interest, and it's the main story that I want to get into, and it's the Spotsville Monster. Now, I'm a big fan of all the stories that take place in the 70s, and specifically 75, because my story takes place in 75. That's when I was born, y'all. That's when it all kicked off for me. It's November of 75. So this is one of those things that I feel, for those that are, it was a way different time. Pull up all the stuff when you see the remakes of TV series, or you see any television shows or movies from the 70s compared to what we are now. It's like, man, it was a really, really different time. Now, to be honest, not a lot's really changed. Technology has changed. But outside of that, we haven't made leaps and bounds in pretty much anything outside of technology since the 70s. So let's take a quick gander into this. The story goes that there is a family called the Nunleys. And Bart Nunley was a young boy. I believe he was about 9 years old at the time that this was all going down. And it started happening outside of the town of Henderson, Kentucky. And so Bart and his family were dealing with some very wild, very creepy things happening. And, well, there's been documentaries done about it. There's been interviews done about it. Bart has written a book about it that I am going to have to get him on the show to discuss. But I've got some little sound bites here from a documentary that he was in. And I think it's best you just hear Bart tell what Bart tells. And so I'll let him discuss real quick what he had going on.
There were several times that my family saw this creature in broad daylight, but it was usually at night is just when they would be more active and come up, and they would just come up and rattle our doors and look in our windows, you know, and walk around our house and just scare the hell out of everybody.
So that is Mr. Nunley, of course, describing what kind of the start of how the whole thing goes. So what ends up happening is this. It begins, of course, with his mother and the two children in this place here. Well, I take that back. I think it was actually way more than that, way back before that, before all that went down. But so with him and this whole thing, like I said, it's 75. So it's after all of this stuff goes down, everything goes crazy. They're living out there. And of course, I mean, they're poor like everybody at the time, right? And so I believe Bart's father was there. And I think, man, I want to say Bart had several brothers and sisters. I want to say there was 5 or 6 of them total. So you can just imagine, they're growing up out in the country. They're just living their best life. They're having a great time, right? And things start happening. And when I say things, they start seeing this large, like 8-foot big male Sasquatch hanging out, like spying on them, is how it starts out, before he starts interacting. And the interactions aren't pleasant. Like, it's not like he's bringing them stuff from the gifting stump or something, right? Like, what this Bigfoot is doing is like what Bart alluded to. He starts tapping on windows, then banging on windows, Then he is banging on the house. There's so much stuff that this Bigfoot's getting, and it's just one. That's the thing that's so strange, is it's not like a group. Like, you know, we've heard these stories of these different Bigfoot tales of where one of the Bigfoot will kind of wind up the other group. And the next thing you know, you got four or five of them, right? What was the Battle of Hinoba, where you got all these Bigfoots fighting? Or we have them where they were throwing rocks on these other groups. So you'll get groups of Bigfoot, but this one wasn't a group. This was one rather large, aggressive male Bigfoot. And for those asking, they were still having sightings. As far as I know, there are still sightings in this area of Kentucky of Bigfoot, but this didn't go on for like a year, right? This didn't go on for like, oh, it happened for a couple of months. It was just a flap and then it went away. They were quite some time that where it happened for several years of this thing going on. Now, what's weird is, and we get this all the time, and Kyle and I discuss this all the time, is if you were having a high occupation area, let's say that they're coming to the house, or let's say this large Bigfoot is coming to your house, why would you, one, I understand that you may not have the money to invest, especially when this started, in good equipment to either film it or capture it on camera, you know, not either, you know, like we're talking video film or, you know, still cameras, however you can do it. But, and this upsets a lot of people, you do have the ability to shoot this thing. You do have the ability to kill it. And I believe, and I'm in this group, now that I think the only way we're going to solve this mystery is if you bring a body in. And if you don't bring a body in, we're going to be stuck in this same loop of chasing our tail forever until we bring in a corpse that is identified as an unknown hominid. And when we bring, and now I hate to say that because it's like what is the old adage? If you love a flower, you never pick it. If you truly love it, you water it and you take care of it. You don't pick it to bring it with you. So if you love a Bigfoot, you don't kill it. You leave it be. And you're just happy with that you got to see it. And I'm 100% happy if I would get to see one. It's not the big deal. I don't want to be the man to kill one. But I'm saying the only way to do it would be to kill one. So my idea with this would be, how would you be able to defend your family any better than if you shot one of these things? So the story jumps forward into that thing where there is a fellow named Roy. And Roy is, you know, he hunts in this area, and I believe he actually lived in the same town as the Nunleys and whatnot. But apparently he was hunting in an area one day, and he finds out about this Bigfoot while he's hunting in this area. So he goes down to the Nunleys to tell them, hey, look, I'm hunting over this area, and I saw this creature, and I'm sure he had already heard stories about this whole thing. And so he lets them know, I know what's going on, right? And I'm on y'all's side. So whatever it takes, we'll make sure we keep everything safe. And it seemed like after that is when it really escalated. Like this creature's interaction with the Nunley family started taking it up to another notch. And so Roy himself believes, you know, what I need to do is, in order to protect these friends of mine, I've got to kill this thing. I have to track it down and kill it. And of course, Roy's got a couple of kids too. So anyway, he gets drawn in. Well, there's a bunch of stuff that goes on with Roy. Roy ends up having a few encounters that are, well, they're scary, of course, but more on the paranormal side, if you will, than the side that you would think would be flesh and blood. And so this story kind of makes you, well, it just feels weird. Well, I'll tell you what. Like I said, Bart wasn't Mr. Nunley. Bart wasn't the only fella that had this going on, right? But, you know, that was there, this whole deal. But I will tell you this, the one that you just listened to. I've got another little soundbite here of folks that it was happening to and that was in his family. This is his mother. And I have his mother telling a story. Now, it's one thing if I'm going to tell a fib. It's a whole nother thing to try to get your mom to tell the story and to try to get your whole family to tell this story. For what? For what? Because one of them wrote a book that nobody knows about unless you are really into cryptozoology. It's not like he got famous, like we always talk about. It's not like he got super wealthy and rich over this whole thing. This is just what he wrote about. So I'm going to play that one for you right quick.
We had this big dusk to dawn light. out there beside the house, and I just happened to look over there, and there was this thing standing right directly under that light. But this had, his face looked kind of like a leather or something, you know? But his hair was long, his arms was long, and it was tall, and it was covered with, it looked like dark brown hair, of course. It was night, but he was under that light. Of course, I screamed. And I told her, I said, hurry up and get them kids over here, Jackie. I said, there's something out there. Well, she got the kids over there, and I seen it several times after that. It was running down the road over a fence there by the barn, and it was, I would say, every bit of 8 foot tall. And that's not exaggerating at all. And it was covered with hair. But it was just standing there looking over at us.
So there's his mother talking about what she describes exactly what she saw. And of course, it didn't advance. It didn't advance on her. It didn't advance on the family. It's just there watching it at night. And that's what he talks about is it's getting crazier and crazier at night. It's building up more and more and more. It starts really intensifying and it starts getting violent. And I mean, extremely violent by what it does, but its interactions, there's a few things here. And yet again, another one, I'm going to let Bart tell you here. Listen to this.
It killed over 250 of our chickens, a horse, a goat, it killed everything but our dogs. And our dogs were really vicious dogs, but when this thing would come up, they would run underneath the house where it couldn't reach them. So what happened was this thing was killing other people's dogs and bringing them up to our property and just dropping them on our property so we would find them, which was really strange. But they were, every one of them was curiously mutilated. The meat wasn't eaten. It looked like they were surgically opened up. The stomach cavity was empty. All the entrails were gone. The eyeballs were missing and so were the tongues. But other than that, they were untouched. And so whatever this thing was, it wasn't killing these things to eat them. It was taking their entrails and soft tissue.
So that alone, what he just describes, sounds exactly like cattle mutes taking place at a UFO landing or any UFO site where we have this mutilation thing, which is wild in and of itself, that the alleged Bigfoot creature is killing dogs someplace else and bringing them surgically, with parts surgically removed, to the Nunley family. Why? This is unlike any crazy case that's ever happened in a Bigfoot. I mean, look, it's one thing whenever we cover some wild stuff that involved with Bigfoot and orbs or Bigfoot and UFOs or Bigfoots, but the fact that this Bigfoot is actively killing 250 chickens, horses, cows, dogs, anything it can get its hands on, and Bigfoot's out there putting a beat down on it. Now, part of the story goes, and if you'll listen, and like I said, folks, there's a good documentary on YouTube, actually, where you can pull it up, where they are talking, and it was filmed a while back, of course, which is, I kind of like it. It's that nostalgic feel of the way it looks, where they discuss it. And even the fella Roy that I had brought up that's helping the Nunley family back then, there's some crazy stuff that went on with him. And what I mean by that is some of the police force didn't want him telling exactly what he had seen and gotten into out there when it came to the media, when it came to concerning the media. Also, they took pretty much all of his evidence, all the physical evidence that Roy had collected and all of the written evidence and interviews and stuff. He had talked to other people around the area. They wanted all of that. Like, if this was nothing, if this was nothing more than what they believe to be a hoax, why are they going so hard in the paint to take back all of this information? Like, they don't want it out there because they know Roy has a lot of stuff going down. Like, this guy knows, right? This dude knows. Now, what's wild is one of them, and I think Roy, some stuff goes down that's not good and the creatures involved and all this stuff. And they ended up finally just, you know, like I said, bouncing out of the whole area. They just ended up, they're done. They don't want to mess with it anymore. It's too much. And look, I can completely understand. I think we can all completely understand if that's what's going down, right? If you're dealing with something that you can't put your finger on and how wild and crazy it actually gets Well, then, yeah, I mean, you're going to want to get out of there. And I believe that that's actually what ended up happening, was between the pressure of the outside, like the law enforcement and other people involved, between the pressure of the creature, all of this stuff. I think Roy ended up pulling the plug. He ended up leaving. He was done with the whole thing. And you know, and that was that. There are actually some tales of other sightings. I mean, like back in 2009, there was sightings. I think back in 2010, I think there's been even more within the last couple of years. There was a little spell, I think, from like 2010, I want to say, to like 2016 or 17. There was no sightings in this area. And then it came back up. But there was other people where people driving said right before dark in this area, you could look out in the tree line, like you might see something, you know, in a field, or you might see something standing there staring at it. There's this story has so many threads of what went on there that, and I'm not talking about the people, I'm not talking about the Nunleys at all. I'm talking about all of those involved trying to make it part of their business, trying to be either to keep it quiet or to be in the middle of it, that it's sad because it's overwhelming, and you can tell how much it affected those people, and the how much the Nunleys, it just weighed on them, and Roy and his family, how much it weighed on him and his family. And this whole thing is to deal with this. Now, there's one more clip that I'm going to play, and it's something that Bart talks about, and it might be, you can tell by the way he tells this that it is from his heart. You can tell by what he says that he has thought about this very, very much. And his answer, I believe, is the answer that deep down inside, all of us that are Bigfoot fanatics and Bigfoot junkies like we all are, that we love to read and research and learn about this thing, and we want it to be real and we hope it's real. I think what he describes and the way he says this is what we really all know to be true. We just don't really want to admit it, but it's the only thing that makes sense. And I hope you enjoyed learning about this whole crazy Kentucky stuff. There's a few more things I may talk about on the outro of this bad boy, but I'm going to leave you with Mr. Nunley and his explanation of what he feels.
What do you think, personally, this thing is?
Personally, Chris, I don't believe it's a flesh and blood, normal type animal that you can go out and hunt or kill or even track. I honestly believe that it's more of a supernatural type creature, or it has supernatural elements. I think that it can be physical when it wants to be, and physical enough to leave footprints and hair and scat and whatever, but when it doesn't want to be physical, I think that it isn't physical anymore, and it can just disappear or reappear wherever it wants. And I've actually spoke to a lot of people whose testimony kind of corroborates my theory on that.
That's kind of a hard one for a lot of people to grasp.
Sure it is, yeah. I realize that, but it's according to my experiences, that's the only theory that really explains everything.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
Mm-hmm.
we have it.
We're back.
We are back. Look, we're buddies with Mr. Nunley, Mr. Barton Nunley.
Uh-huh, yeah.
His whole family's involved in the whole thing.
I have an autographed book. What was it? His books. Humanoids or whatever.
Oh, yeah. We could get Nunley on. I will tell you this. After sitting around chatting with him, getting to know him, I believe him.
Yeah,
I don't know what went down, you know, 100% because we weren't there. But Barton spends, and still does, a lot of time in the woods. Grew up in the woods. Right. Like, it's not going to be something misidentification.
Well, that's what we always talk about, is who is the observer? Yeah. When you have a trained observer, someone who's an outdoorsman, it lends more credence to the story. And we were talking before we sat down to record in the studio this morning. We were talking about a funny gorilla story that's going to be coming up soon.
Oh, yeah. But
we were talking about that, and we were looking into the skunk ape trail cam photographs. We were watching a video of this thing eating mussels or shells. And we started talking about how a lot of these pictures look like an orangutan.
Yeah.
And is it possible? I think it is, that some of these photographs and some of these sightings is nothing more than an orangutan that got loose, right? People can buy animals on the black market. We know that. And especially like you were talking about in the 90s when we were kids.
Well, you'd start thinking about from the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
It was a lot easier. The reason I know this, and I may have discussed it in the past, my father's cousin, he would make him my cousin, but they were very close. Way before I was born, he died when I was very young. He was a rodeo clown for a while.
Right.
And he had a spider monkey.
Yeah.
And he like legitly bought it at like a first Monday trades days or something. He knew a guy where you would go buy puppies and chickens. And he's like, oh, you got a monkey? Give me that monkey.
Yeah, you could buy them.
Yeah. And then he trained this monkey as best you can. This thing, I remember as a kid, this thing was crazy. But it was one of those deals. I think it was much easier to get your hands on something like that. So for me to believe, like we had discussed about the tiger story that we've told in the past.
Yeah, right.
For us, at least here in Texas, and I'm sure in other states that have kind of stuff like this, you wouldn't be surprised. You'd be like, I could see where one of those would get loose. And the trouble is, everybody, you know, some of you are probably screaming, well, why didn't you alert authorities? If you don't have it legally,
yeah,
and your Siberian tiger or your orangutan got out, who are you going to call?
Exactly.
You're going to be like, hey, look, I know I'm not supposed to have this endangered species at my house hanging out, and I've been giving it beers, and I had one too many cans of beers and fell asleep and my orangutan got out.
Well, how many people were inspired just by the Clint Eastwood movie with Clyde?
Oh, yeah.
In Which Way But Loose, right? You know? Yeah. They saw the orangutan, it looked cool, they bought one, realized it was a lot not like the one in the movie, and they couldn't handle it, and they let it go.
Yeah.
And then fast forward 5 or 6 years later, in the middle of the Everglades, there's a trail cam that picks up this orangutan. With, you know, their long hair, it's natted now, covered with mud, it's got leaves on it, and it's eating mussels on the bank of some swamp. You could easily misidentify that as a Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
But I don't think Barton did.
No, I don't think Barton did either, but I'm saying I think
it could happen.
There are lots of cases where it is simply misidentification. The person's not lying. They wholeheartedly believe that they saw Bigfoot.
But maybe it's not
him. But it wasn't a Bigfoot.
Well, you and I just was discussing off air the friend that we have, who years back claimed to have seen a small spider monkey or a small macaw or whatever those little monkeys are up in a tree here in Parker County.
Here in Parker County. I used to work for her husband. He was a rancher, cattleman.
Recently passed. Stay hard, brother.
And she said that they were out there mending fences one day, and she looked up in the tree and she saw, like you said, a spider monkey. The monkey like that's on Indiana Jones.
The one that's eating the dates.
Yeah, eating the dates like that. It looked like that in a tree. And, of course, he thought she was crazy. And she's like, no, I watched it for 10 minutes. But now as I sit here and I read stories of, you know, animals that have seen in the wild that aren't supposed to be there, like you've done several on hyenas.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It makes me wonder, like, could that have been one like your friend, your dad's, your cousin or whatever, bought that?
Yeah.
It got loose. Maybe they didn't want it and they set it loose on purpose. But for whatever reason, that thing moved out into the trees and was able to thrive. Now, maybe this was in the summer and maybe when winter got here, it killed it. But for whatever reason, I think, you know, people see. Look, there's famous boxers and rappers and drug leaders like I talk about all the time buy exotic pets. Hippopotamuses. Heck, Mike Tyson had a tiger.
Yeah.
I mean, people do wild stuff. And if you talk about a state like Texas, where the tiger was seen, if you want to talk about missing orangutans in the state of Florida, those are two states where I can totally see something like that happening.
100%. 100%. I got you something here, bud.
Okay.
This comes from a little bit ago, and I want to read you this. It says, witness was pulled underwater by strong, hairy arms at Avocado Lake in Fresno County, California.
Okay.
In November of 2019, I received a phone call from a man, it says here, in Fresno, California, who I will refer to as R.A. He, every time I think about R.A.,
you think of spitting chiclets.
I think of spitting chiclets and Shoresy. Every yeah. time.
I
every
hear time. You.
He wanted to, now it's stuck in my head, his voice of him saying this story, dude. He wanted to tell me about two incidents he and a friend had at Avocado Lake in Fresno County. Avocado Lake Park is a 210-acre day-use park located 23 miles east of Fresno, California. The lake has a strange history, specifically many mysterious drownings and Bigfoot activity. Stories have been told over the years surrounding these deaths and what lurks below. Many local residents believe the lake may possibly be haunted. R.A. has been visiting the lake since he was a child. His family had regularly gone there for recreation. He and his friends also spent time at the location when he became an adult. R.A. knew about the strange occurrences, including the Bigfoot sightings. His family had experienced a Bigfoot sighting at Huron along the California Aqueduct when he was younger, so he was well aware of the existence of these creatures. The first incident at Avocado Lake occurred in 2014 while R.A. and his friend had been swimming. The friend was attempting to swim across the lake to the far bank, and as he got within 20 foot of the opposite shore, he described what felt like a pair of strong, hairy arms wrap around both of his legs and starting to pull him under.
Can you imagine? That would be absolutely terrifying.
This is the stuff I think about every time somebody asks me to get in the water. This goes through my mind like,
I've never thought
hard
of
no.
Underwater Sasquatch grabbing me. But
anything terrifying to get a hold of you in the water, I think about.
Oh, man. Go ahead.
Now, he said that if there had not been long aquatic vegetation extending from the shore of which he grabbed hold, he would have certainly been pulled under the surface. I'm going to stop right there. I don't know of any strong underwater like vegetation to hold on to when something's pulling you away. You grabbing moss?
Like, I don't know.
What do you got? What's in the water, bro? R.A. told me that his friend was absolutely terrified and refused to get back into the water. But in 2016, R.A. and other friends had a picnic at the park. And later in the afternoon, he and a lady friend walked down to the lake and sat along the shore. As they were talking, they both noticed a hairy hand and arm extend from the water near a large rock in the lake. They were about 50 foot away and both got an excellent view of a well-defined human-like hand and arm that was covered in dark, coarse hair. R.A. said that the arm was very long and extended well over 3 foot above the surface. R.A. has shown some interest in investigating the lake and other areas, and he's promised to keep in touch with us and report any findings.
I wonder if there's been any other sightings, like of other people witnessed the same
thing. This arm or something come up out of the water?
Yeah, because like, what could it be?
Exactly.
It has a hairy human-like hand on it?
We got a fully aquatic Bigfoot?
Never heard of that.
Right? Like, what could that be?
I'd be interested in the legends of the area. Like, I don't know if it's a natural lake or not, but like, there's lots of lakes here in Texas where once there were towns and stuff, and then they flooded them.
Yeah.
And those towns and cemeteries and stuff, it's all still there, but under the water. So I wonder if this could be like a water spirit or something.
Could be. Listen to this crazy idea that I had reading this when I first found the story.
Okay.
You and I were talking, like, everybody knows your disdain for lake monsters.
I don't have a disdain.
Everybody.
It's just
out there knows Kyle's deep hatred and dismissiveness of lake monster sightings.
It's just my least favorite. I don't hate them.
So I ask this.
Okay. You're asking me?
Yeah. Okay. I'm just thinking about this. This is where my mind went. Think about, you're a skinwalker, right?
Okay.
Kyle's a skinwalker. Kyle's trying to find victims to prey upon. What better way than to be an aquatic skinwalker? And then it just appears as if they drown.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You see what I'm saying? What if a lot of these monster sightings, I'm not saying all the ones look like fish are, but like these humanoids in the lake could be skinwalkers. Maybe they've found a way to adapt to the water.
And I just sit down there all day long watching bass and stuff till hopefully somebody tries to swim across.
Just like you used to sit in the bottom of the porta potty portal.
I'm out in the water. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could easily be watching them and be like, okay, this is a busy time at the lake. I better go ahead and get my walking skin on. And then you just slip off in the drink and grab someone.
Anybody who's an amateur filmmaker, you could use this plot to make a pretty cool story, right? Because Luke makes me watch these horrible horror movies. And this idea sounds way better than some of the ones I've seen.
And you got a skinwalker using the lake for an excuse as to kill folk.
Yeah.
Making them appear to be drowned.
Well, as we alluded to earlier, and I'm sure if you follow on social media, you know, me and Cam are going back to Tennessee next week to appear on the Ducks Unlimited podcast. Yep. We had such a good time there when we were there in October, when we did BlurryCon, that they're having us back. So we need some stories. And if you want to share your story on the Ducks Unlimited podcast,
yeah,
you can. You need to go to ducks.org/podcast. You click on that. There's a little button on the screen. You hit that. You can record your story, and maybe it'll find its way on that show. We would love to hear it. If you have a story you'd like to email the show, you can email expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Let's not forget about our sponsors. To get 20% off, text EXPANDED, that's EXPANDED, to 64,000. Text EXPANDED to 64,000, and you can get yourself some IQ bars, some hydration mixes,
so good.
Some mushroom coffee mixes, anything you want. Also, an AG1 offering new subscribers a free $76 gift when you sign up. You'll get a welcome kit, a bottle of D3, K2, and 5 free travel packs in your first box. Make sure you go to drinkag1.com/expanded to get this offer. Cam, I know you got a short week because you're getting ready to go Tennessee next week. Any big plans between now and Tennessee?
I don't think so. I think I got to get ready to go up there.
Me too.
Got to make sure, because we're going to do some other stuff while we're there. So I got to make sure I got everything packed up and ready to go. But yeah, it'll be here before we know it now.
Yeah. And if you got any suggestions or cool things to do while in Memphis, you can always email the show.
Heck yeah.
expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. I'd love to find out. We're taking our wives this time. Last time it was just me and you.
Yeah.
So this time we're going to take the wives.
It was a lot more fun last time.
Yeah,
probably. I mean, it'll be
we were playing disc golf and goofing off, right?
We can say whatever we want. Our wives don't listen. Y'all know that.
Yeah, you already know.
We can say whatever. We can tell them what we're getting them for Christmas. They'd have no idea.
Yeah, I'm be getting a new greenhouse for my wife's birthday.
That's what she
sounds like, because the last one got destroyed. Anyways, I hope everybody has a good week. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Kim.
Peace, y'all.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.